The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Thanks for being with us. Good Monday. Off we go into yet another week. We'll have John Wilner with us momentarily, as we do every Monday. Wilner Hotline, all things from a national space on the college football, basketball scene. What a train wreck Stanford is. What an absolute disaster, right? And Andrew Luck being involved there. They blow out their football coach over the weekend. Well, how does a program like Stanford just become like a middle-of-the-road whack school? How does that happen when it comes to sports? I get it. You're going to go after the best of the best academically. Sure, Christian McCaffrey and Bryce Love and Richard Sherman and Johnny Lynch, John Elway. You can go all the way back and go all the way through. But that program has bottomed out. And why is that? I want to get into that with John. Plus, of course, the Final Four. And what does he believe the future holds for U of A basketball? Are they a nice Sweet 16 team every year? Are they not where the Final Four schools are? Obviously, because they're not playing, you could say, sure. But are they just like, you know, every year they're going to go to the Sweet 16 and that's going to be about it for the U of A? We'll talk with John Wilner about that. The Draft Nick is with us. Daniel Rios, the Draft Nick, gives his thoughts, impressions, opinions. The draft is less than a month away. I want to get into his top 10 of his mock, what the Cardinals should do, and much more with the Draft Nick, Daniel Rios. That comes up on today's show. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always and through the years, that's Desert Financial Credit Union. We do appreciate their support. I had a fabulous weekend. I had a weekend where I sat out at a golf course and watched the LPGA, and you're like, that doesn't sound very exciting. Well, here's how it goes. When it's March in Phoenix, and it's as beautiful as it is, I can't just sit in here and watch March Madness all day long. There's a reason why God created the DVR, whatever your spiritual belief is. There's a reason why I can come in here and just zip right back to the games, and I can go out and run around and do whatever. Went to opening day for the Diamondbacks on Thursday. Friday, I was at golf. Saturday, I went out to golf. Yesterday, I went out to golf. Watched a lot of college basketball back. Saw the end of the Diamondbacks game Saturday night. What a bleeping bleep show that was. Getting faked out on third base. And there's some that are upset today that Torrey ran out of bench players. But of course, as I like to point out, they won. So get over it. I think I'll just start with the Diamondbacks because they are the most interesting team in town. If you want me to sit here and bang on the Suns, it's just not even a challenge. It's just not. If you're one of those that say, I am a diehard Suns fan, yes, you are. You have died hard this year. This has to go down as the most disappointing season in franchise history, bar none. So I'd rather be a little nice, a little positive before I really dive into them here in a few minutes. The Diamondbacks, so I went opening day, and it was great. I was up in the press box, got to see people, friends. Opening day is one of those where you do show up, you take it all in, you see everybody, you see the guys like Steve Gilbert and Nick Pecoro, whose lives have come to an end for the next 6 months. If you think covering a sport, like some of you are, you're at your terminal, you're at your job, and you're just saying, man, I really wish I could cover Major League Baseball every day. Really? So when there's 162 days that are booked, and the beauty of baseball, why baseball is the greatest sport, just so we're clear on this from my point of view, there is no timer, there is no stopwatch, there is no made-for-TV, there is no, you know, infinite delays like there are at the end of NBA games. At the end of NBA games are just hard. Just timeout, time foul, timeout. College basketball has come the same way. Baseball, the Diamondbacks yesterday were just getting their doors kicked in, and they came back in a big way with a great rally. A lot of Cubs fans there. So the opening weekend, it's fun, but if you're one of those that just wishes you were on a plane today to Yankee Stadium, like some of my cohorts are, Chris Garagiola is on a plane today. He's going to New York City. He's going to be doing Diamondbacks Yankees from Yankee Stadium tomorrow. It's going to be awesome and amazing. And then he goes to the next city, and the next city, and the next city, and the next city, and the next city. Do you imagine being the play-by-play voice of the Chicago White Sox this year or the Colorado Rockies? You're just done. You're not going anywhere. And you've got to sit there and describe it and sell it. Oh, what a great time we're having here at the ballpark. Never mind the team blows. Show up. Come on. It's a great situation here in Arizona that we have a very good team. And my suggestion last week, I'm going to stick with this. My suggestion last week, where there's these people that gnash their teeth that have way too much time on their hands about why Corbin Burns wasn't the opening day starter. And guess what? Their game against the Yankees tomorrow, here's a shocker. It's on national television. Do you think that maybe MLB said, hey, we want to make sure, and you can go through any explanation you want. I'm not buying any of it. When we see and I hear, like, what was it last week? Miami played Golden State and Steph Curry didn't play, and the ESPN people were pissed because they're sitting there selling it. They want to get a ratings point. Corbin Burns, Yankee Stadium, national broadcast on TBS. Come on. This isn't that hard. It's just the business of sports. That's where we are now. Well, it's not like the old days. I'm sorry. You're right. Move on. Yankee Stadium tomorrow with Corbin Burns. I will watch that. Not many things I look at and say I have to have an appointment viewing. That is appointment viewing for me. The Suns are not appointment viewing. Man, and I get it. Look, I came here in 93 and I was sold on you got to do the Suns, you get to do the Colangelo show, you get to do the Westfall show, we carry the games, everything's great, everything's purple and orange. And I tilt my head when things start going the wrong way, get people mad, and oh man, you're just not supporting the Suns like we all did. Like, it's not my job. Okay. When things are good, they're good. When things are bad, they're bad. This is really bad. So they gave up 148. Let me see if I can even choke up. 148 points they gave up last night. Like, huh. They gave up 46 in the second quarter last night. You got to work hard or not work at all to give up 46 in a quarter in an NBA game. And the Suns did. And then Durant gets hurt. So, of course, the way that the team has been structured, Durant rolls an ankle and is out. The conspiracy theorists are, but I'm not buying that. He's hurt. He is hurt. And he's going to have the MRI today. It may have already been done. But regardless, where they are, this season cannot get over quickly enough. It just can't. They've got to go play the Bucks tomorrow. They've got the Celtics after that in Boston. They have the Knicks after that on Sunday. Then they've got the Warriors, the Thunder, the Spurs, and they finish with the Kings in Sacramento. And there was this talk like a week or so ago that, boy, that game at Sacramento is going to mean a lot. Really? They're a game and a half out of the postseason right now. You just want this season of misery to end. There'll be a clean out of James Jones. Durant's name will be thrown around. Will they trade Devin Booker? The storylines are pretty easy to navigate through. The owner's saying he shouldn't. I'm always one that says you should never say never in terms of holding on to talent. It's a conversation for another day, but I am all ears about Devin Booker. I need this thing to bottom out, and I need this thing to be run the right way, like, let's just say, Oklahoma City. Bottom out, rebuild. Bottom out, rebuild. Not bottom out for a whole decade like Robert Sarver had them do. And I don't know, you look at this roster, and in our space in Phoenix, if the Suns go get a player, give you an example. The Suns go get a player, and everybody's so excited, like this is gonna fill in all the gaps. This is gonna be the reason that we've got to turn around, because the Suns went out and they got Nick. They got Big Nick. Big Nick's done what? Well, they have Bol Bol. Bol Bol's done what? Like, really, what outside of the big two? Well, Colin Gillespie said, this is not going to get you anywhere. You have to get to a point where you can't just sit there and homer out on the Suns. You can't. Or any team in this town, for that matter. You can't sit here and get wound up about if they decide to move Steve Nash in the best interest of the organization, that they do it. And it was, at the end of his career, was in the best interest of the organization. I'm not banging on Steve. It's just, you can't have that. You cannot have blind loyalty. You can't do it. And when you have ownership that's worried about filling seats is not as important as it once was. Having people watch the product is more important because they're paying. It's a whole nother topic, by the way. I heard some fans really pissed over the weekend about the Diamondbacks and their TV deal. But that's another conversation. You know, March Madness has not had a lot of madness, but I kind of like the fact we've got a bunch of heavyweights. We have a bunch of heavyweights. They're going to go in the ring, and they're going to fight it out. Duke, Houston, you can't get better than that. Auburn, Florida? And I haven't seen much of Auburn. I've seen a lot of Florida, seen a ton of Duke, seen some of Houston. If you are, we're going to talk to Wilner in a couple minutes about the U of A. You're the U of A, and you just made it through the Big 12 season. You might want to take a step back and look at all the teams in the Big 12 that had a run in the NCAA tournament. And ask yourself, are we really competitive enough as we need to be? Or are we just a Sweet 16 team every year? Or is it just luck of the draw we drew Duke? So there you go. John Wilner is next. All things college sports, the Final Four, and then the draft, Nick Daniel Rios. I'm Brad Sussmat. It is Monday, and that means John Wilner is nice enough to drop in all things around college sports. John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. You can find him online at Wilner Hotline. He is part of the Canzano Wilner podcast. I have that in reverse order in my mind. No offense to John or John.
Nope.
So there you go. All right, we're going to get to the Final Four. I know today that's the big hot topic button, but I'm looking at what is going on at Stanford for our football audience. Let's just start there. What an absolute mess. So,
yep.
Andrew Luck get involved. They fire their coach over the last Friday, I think it was. They come up with Frank Reich today to lead them. John, what is going on at Stanford?
Clean up on aisle 9. So, yes, it is a mess. It has been a mess there in a lot of ways for many years. So Andrew Luck was hired as a football general manager in late November and given authority over football with a direct reporting line to the university president. In February, athletic director Bernard Muir stepped down. Obviously, he had been marginalized after many years of missteps. So at this point, and then the ESPN report comes out that Troy Taylor had been investigated twice for poor conduct directed toward female staffers. They didn't fire Taylor after the investigations, but they did fire him once the optics turned bad because of the ESPN report. So they fired Taylor. They got no AD. They got no head coach. And the guy in charge of football is a former quarterback with no administrative experience, but at least he understands football and has a lot of influence at Stanford. So Luck brings in, he had two choices. One was to try to hire a permanent coach now, and it's not a good time to do that, or name an acting coach for 2025. He chose that route. He went with somebody he knows and trusts, Frank Reich, coached him at the Colts. Reich will oversee Stanford for the next 9 months while they conduct a search for a permanent coach. But they also have to figure out what Stanford football wants to be in the age of the transfer portal and NIL and revenue sharing and with the ACC factor, right? They got a lot of institutional issues they got to resolve before they can really figure out what type of coach they want. So I actually think this is a smart move.
How is it that Stanford under David Shaw, and it felt like David Shaw towards the end was looking more and more at the NFL, or just didn't have his belly into it, I would guess is the best way for me to put it. Like, the fire didn't seem like it was there for him towards the end. How did this once proud destination point become just kind of a middle of the whack conference place?
Yeah, well, it was poorly run by the former athletic director, former provost, former university president, right? Because the academic piece, right, the university has a lot of say on what goes on athletically.
Sure.
And bad management, bad decisions, right? I mean, it's the same thing that happened in the old Pac-12, right? You got enough bad strategy, things are going to turn south. And in this case, yes, things deteriorated on the field after, you know, they had the Christian McCaffrey years, 15, 16, then Bryce Love, 2017. Then it started to turn downhill. Shaw did well in the COVID year, and then they had a couple 3-9 years. He left after 2022. They hire Troy Taylor. He goes 3-9, 3-9. Part of it isn't Troy Taylor. Part of it was that the transfer portal is a huge challenge for Stanford, right? So's NIL, huge challenge for Stanford. The university didn't adjust to the new era quickly, which made it difficult for Taylor to build a competitive roster, frankly. I mean, if you're taking your transfers from the Ivy League and not the SEC or the Big 12, it's tough to compete. So institutionally, it was very challenging for Stanford. Then you add on the mismanagement, and that's where we get the mess that they're in.
How does Frank Reich go sit in a living room? Like, I'm only here 9 months.
Yeah, he doesn't. He doesn't.
Yeah.
But to a certain extent, it doesn't matter who Stanford's coach is, because if you're going to Stanford, you're picking up because it's Stanford more than because of the football. And the parents especially are picking it because it's Stanford, right? That has always been Stanford went, I don't know, 1-11, and like they were recruiting Toby Gerhart and Richard Sherman, right? So they have always been able to get a certain caliber of player that cares about academics. I don't think that's going to change, but they do need over time. It does matter who the coach is. In a single offseason, I don't think it will. And Luck will do, in a lot of ways, Luck is their chief recruiter, whether he's actually in the home or not.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of, especially quarterbacks are going to think about going to Stanford because of Luck. So Reich is very short term, not only on the field as the coach, but also recruiting. I think they'll be okay, you know, once they figure out their direction. How much revenue sharing are they going to participate in? Is the university going to cut them breaks on undergraduate transfers? All those kinds of things.
But you like the move today.
I don't necessarily like or dislike Reich himself. I just think naming an acting coach for 2025 was a smarter move than trying to rush and hire a permanent coach when you haven't even figured out what you want to be.
Right, right. No, I think that's a good way to put it. John Wilner with us for a few minutes. U of A, before we get over to the Final Four, we talked last week. U of A goes in. They put up a very valiant fight against.
Yes.
KJ Lewis goes immediately into the transfer portal, which some U of A fans are losing their minds over. That's just the world we're in, where everyone's going to lose somebody. Where do you think the program is under Tommy Lloyd? And are they just going to be a Sweet 16 every year? Do you think they've got that Elite Eight? Because there's people that are disappointed they didn't go further, John.
Well, yes, there are. But this is the first time that they can actually go out with their heads held high in a long time, I think. You know, they played really well in that game. Certainly gave Duke a better game than Alabama did.
Right.
I think that they're in pretty good shape. But and I'm actually publishing something this morning on they need to evaluate. It's not just Arizona. ASU's in the same boat. Utah, Colorado. You got to evaluate your program now that you've been through the Big 12 for a season, right? Because it's totally different from the Pac-12 in a lot of ways, above all with the level of competitiveness. I think Arizona, for instance, needs to evaluate its non-conference schedule philosophy, because two-thirds of the season is now much more challenging than it used to be. So it only makes sense to evaluate the 10 games that you can control. For instance, losing Lewis, we don't know for sure that he's gone, right? He could be in the portal to see what kind of offers he gets and end up back in Tucson for all we know. You can't rush to conclusions with portal situations. I think as long as Lloyd's there, they're going to be competitive. But I do think that whether they're second round, Sweet 16, Elite Eight, that's the range until there's reason to think they are going to suddenly start recruiting the caliber of players you need to get to the Final Four. We see what that's like. They're frankly short of that. And Lloyd's got to figure out how he can get there as a kind of a longer term goal. But yeah, they're not the elite program that they were for decades. They are not. They're like on that second tier. And the Big 12 makes it even more difficult to get out of that second tier.
It's an interesting way to put it. Final Four, what do you make of it?
First time been all number one seed since 2008. Based on efficiency metrics, it should be a fantastic two games. And yet, I can't help but think that Duke is the class of the quartet. They have got the most, they got the best player, they got the most lottery picks, and they got the best offense. That's a good combination to have. Duke, number one offense in terms of efficiency. Houston, number one defense in terms of efficiency. Great contrast. Should be a terrific game. But I just think Duke is, you know, 6 to 10 points better than the other three teams. And I'd be surprised if they don't walk away with the championship. They are so good on both ends of the court. They got a rim protector. They got scorers. And Flag is just at a different level.
Yeah, no question. I'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time as always. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Brett.
There's John Wilner, and we're back with more after this timeout. Looky here. It's the draft, Nick. Mr. Rios, Daniel Rios with us for a few minutes because the draft, Nick, follows this stuff inside and out. We're less than a month away. Everybody's got an opinion. In his case, it's the right one. Where others, it's everybody's got an opinion except it's the wrong one. So, Draftnik, help me out here. Let's just start with the Cardinals in all seriousness. And I'm looking at them in the first round and thinking that, yeah, they got to get help on the pass rush because the pass rush last year was non-existent. And they've got to get help on the offensive line. So as we sit here today, and you're looking at the draft with the Cardinals, what are you seeing, Dan?
Yeah, Brad, I think you hit it spot on right there. I mean, their pass rush last year was not good at all. It wasn't good. And now you step into this next year and you come in the free agency and you get a guy like Josh Sweat, you get a guy like Dalvin Tomlinson, you get a guy, you re-sign Baron Browning. And yeah, these guys are good, but do they solve the problem? No. And luckily for them, this draft is absolutely loaded in defensive line talent. And one of the biggest conversations with a lot of these teams is, are you going to address the defensive line in the first round? Or can you come back in round three or four and get a guy who probably is going to be a starter? So for me, I view them as a team that, you know, for sure should go defensive line in the first round, because I think some of those guys at the top are there for a reason. And one of those guys for me is Derek Harmon out of Oregon. He is a freakish athlete. He doesn't have many sacks on the year when you look at him, but I mean, he is a pocket pusher. He will collapse that pocket. He has a presence. 6'4", 313 pounds, and athletic freak. And I think if you go for a guy like that and you're in that 3-4 scheme like Jonathan Gannon likes to run, the thing about him is he's also versatile with that frame. He can line up in a three technique. He can line up as a nose tackle. He can go out wide and rush from the edge. And with players like that, that's really valuable in today's NFL. And another guy like that is Shamar Stewart out of Texas A&M. One of the biggest talking points right now in the NFL world landscape is because he's one of those who is the athletic freak who has size, speed, but he doesn't have the production, only has 3.5 sacks in 3 years of college football. So it's a little rough, but he's 6'6", 34.5-inch arms. So, I mean, you look at, he had a lot of pressures last year, Texas A&M, he just doesn't finish too much. So that's another guy I think that they can definitely go and attack. And you mentioned it too, offensive line. Gray Zabel, I think, is, you know, one of those guys who they easily can get there at 16, can play guard, can play center, can play tackle. He only allowed 1.6% pressure rate last year at North Dakota State. And yeah, it's North Dakota State, but still went to the Senior Bowl, dominated. So I think the trenches are definitely on the Cardinals' future in the first round.
Daniel Rios with us for a couple of minutes. The draft, Nick, NFL draft is less than a month away. What's your mock look like right now? It's just, I don't need to go through all 32 teams, but like, what's your top 10, top 12 look like right now?
Yeah, I could just go over it real quick. So I think this draft is very interesting to where, you know, number one, I think Cam Ward goes to the Titans. I think they've set up a perfect, not perfect situation, but the perfect offseason to where you kind of, kind of show people that, yeah, we're going to go quarterback at one. And if they don't draft him at one, it's the biggest smoke screen I think I've been a part of, because you sign Dan Moore, you get some weapons. And now outside of that, I think everyone's kind of like, what do the Browns do? Do you go Travis Hunter? Do you go Shedeur Sanders? Do you go Carter? You go, do you trade back? And that's the interesting part of this draft is, usually around this time, Brad, you'll know the top 10. You'll know, yeah, these 10 guys are going. Right now, it's like, what's going to happen? So for me, I think, Shedeur Sanders is a very enticing player here, but I think the Browns, I have them going Abdu Carter. I think you look at it, Myles Garrett and Abdu Carter rushing the passer. It's you can't beat that. So I think that's definitely a real possibility, and I think it'd be a smart one. And quarterback situation, I think for that franchise, it's looking rough right now, but I think you kind of, do you want to just keep swinging and missing? Let's say you take Sanders, and then next year it's like, all right, he doesn't pan out. What are we going to swing again? Or we could have had a blue chip player like Abdu Carter. So that's an interesting conversation for them. Number three,
It's Cleveland too. Like,
it is Cleveland as well.
there's always something. And if you're a Browns fan and you're watching, yelling, "I'm right," every year you guys seem to screw up. It doesn't matter what happens. And I know you've got the dog pound, and I know you're excited about the Brownies. And I know if it's a place where quarterbacks go to die. They haven't come through. So I'm looking at Cleveland like you saying, if you trade back, trade back, and you are able to get the extra picks. That's not a roster that is one player away, Daniel.
Yeah, and you talk about that, and it's like, who would be that team, that would trade up? You look at the order, the Giants potentially can move up one because they, it's reported that they want Shador. But who would the Patriots trade up for? Who would the Jaguars realistically trade up for? So you kind of look deeper in that order, and it's like, which team in the teens would maybe like to make a splash play in the top 10? The Cowboys are definitely an interesting team who, could make come up and take a guy like a Travis Hunter, who could come up and take a guy like, Ashton Jeantie. So it's definitely interesting to see which teams are really interested to come up. But in the Browns case, I mean, you're picking number two overall. It's, that roster is, like you mentioned, far from winning. So I think you just take that blue chip player and, you'd be safe. You come out in the draft, like round one, you want in that first meeting after, you want to be like, yeah, we have a winner. We have a player. You don't want to be, taking a chance round one, and then, a couple of years down the line, you're just like, man, why did we, reach on that quarterback? Or why did we reach on that receiver? So it's always an interesting aspect. And I think in the top five, you just got to go for blue chip players. And now number three, and we're talking about a team that I don't think has a luxury of taking a blue chip player, unfortunately, in the Giants. Shedeur Sanders, I have him going to New York. Brian Daboll, obviously they took Russell Wilson and Winston in free agency. But I think Daboll wants that guy to where he can kind of develop him. He can bring him up. Now, will ownership let him get that time? That's a big conversation of where, do they take Travis Hunter instead of a quarterback because you got a quarterback in free agency? It's a very interesting dynamic. But I think Daboll wants his project. He wants his guy. As we all remember, Daniel Jones wasn't his guy. He didn't come in there and draft him. So I think Shador is a, that kind of that West Coast offense, get the ball out of your hands quick guy that Daboll can develop, can work with. And, like we've seen, he's worked with a project like Josh Allen in Buffalo. He knows that, it takes time to get these guys comfortable. It takes time to, get a quarterback ready to play in the NFL. Josh Allen, I mean, we remember year one or one and two. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't looking good up there in Buffalo. A lot of people were ready to write him off, and then it clicked. So it takes time. Got to be patient. And I think Shador and Cam Ward as well. If you give them time, if you're patient with them, they're definitely the traits that you like to see. That can be a a fringe, average NFL starter. Star, we don't know because, I mean, you go and look at Patrick Mahomes coming out of college. No one was calling him the next, three times Super Bowl appearance, because he had a lot of flaws in his game as well, but he had those attributes. So Shador is another one of those guys who.
Let me jump in here for a second. For the sake of time, just go through the rest of what you have in your top 10. Sake of time, what do you have?
Sake of time. So we got Travis Hunter going at four. One that I think would be, you know, he plays receiver there because the Patriots need a receiver and Drake May developing. Jaguars, which I think may be a surprise, but Jalen Walker out of Georgia. I think he is a freakish athlete, can rush the passer, can play off-ball linebacker, and is just a, you know, a menace on the defensive line. Him, you know, Josh Hines Allen and Trayvon Walker would be a trio of pass rushers. And this is my first surprise. I think a lot of people would be surprised by this, but I think Jadae Brown to the Raiders at six. Slot corner, one of a guy who Pete Carroll would love, can tackle, and I think would instantly fit into, you know, that cover three type scheme that, you know, the Raiders potentially may run. We'll have to kind of see what they officially do. But that leaves the Jets at seven, to where Mason Graham just kind of falls into your lap. I mean, this guy is a quick, powerful, isn't the most, you know, you look at his measurables, he isn't that crazy, but I mean, he wins quick and he's dominant. Number eight, I have the Panthers. You need a receiver, but I think Tet McMillan is too high here. So I think you go with a, you know, non-traditional type player in Tyler Warren, who can block, who can catch, who is a tremendous playmaker, would definitely help Bryce Young develop. Number nine, Jihad Campbell to the Saints. They just need a defensive playmaker, and they also need to get younger in the linebacker room. And he is a guy who can play off ball, who can rush the passer, and is another, you know, one of those blue chip players. And number 10, Ashton Jeanty, the Bears.
Ooh.
What might be a surprise to a lot of people is the Bears don't really have a lot of needs outside of like running back and edge. And like I mentioned earlier, edge is a deep class. So you get that blue chip player in Jeanty. And I think Jeanty to six to the Raiders is a very real possibility, but I had them surprising people and going Jadae Brown.
That is Mr. Rios, the draft Nick, Daniel Rios. Appreciate the time and insight as always. Thanks.